Time to start. So if you want to take out your books and your Bible, we're going to start with Song 712. We have one song from the yellow, and that'll be in the middle. So I don't know if you picked up on the theme that was in my head when you looked at these three songs ahead of time. Try to explain that a little bit as we go. Before we venture into this, Anthony, would you lead us in prayer? Careful how I say this with the kids, because I don't want to get the wrong idea across to kids when I say this. But I'm a fighter. I've always considered myself to be a fighter. That doesn't mean I'm punching people. Probably done some things that I'm not real proud of in my past, though. But I'm an opposer sometimes if I feel like I need to be. I think I'm a stand-up person. Against things or people sometimes, and have done that in my life. I'm what I would call a non-backer downer, which some people would probably think you're just stubborn, maybe almost to a fault. So I wonder, as I think about that, why don't I do that against my will? Why don't I fight against my own will? Why do I back down when it comes down to my will and the sin that entangles me? So the things that are my problems and my issues that I have that I would consider to be sinful and maybe have issues with from time to time, why don't I oppose that like I do other things? Why do I cave? So tonight's songs and the lessons are about getting through that so that we can see the glory of God in the end. And it's really a battle cry that I feel as I put these three songs together for tonight's study. I felt almost militaristic in thinking through these songs. You don't have to think of them the same way as I do. I'm just kind of sharing my thought process in it. When I look at all the songs that people sent me as suggestions, I kind of started trying to group some of them, and I just feel that at least two of these, if not all three of them, really jumped out to be kind of in a group. So what I was saying at the beginning, you know, about battling my own will, I think you can see this in some of the things we'll talk about tonight. So the first song that we're going to look at tonight is number 712, How Long Till the Morning. And the song was chosen by Mason. And we'll hear more from Mason in just a little bit. You don't have to say anything. I did that to see if you were paying attention. Have you ever stayed up all night? Just give me a little hands up or a nod if you've ever stayed up all night. Don't worry about the reason. Ever stayed up all night? A lot of people in this room have stayed up all night for one reason or another, okay? And it could be, it's not something you do very often. And I'm not, if you worked third shift, I don't know that counts. You know what I mean. It could be because you're sick. It could be because you're working or studying. I never pulled all-nighters. I shouldn't say I didn't pull an all-nighter in college. I stayed up all night a few times, but I wasn't studying. It's probably watching movies or playing basketball. Or you just can't sleep, or you're driving all night. And I've done that a few times, and I know some of you have too. We did some Florida treks, driving all through the night. I may have slept a little bit, I get that. Or you might just be sitting with somebody that needs help. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why you may have stayed up all night. But if you've done that, it can really get long. I remember that, Jody and I chaperoned a couple of times at the school with post-prom things, you know, that the kids go to, so it's a safe place, we're locked in, we're going to have games and things like that, and so we go chaperone, and I'm just like, you know, by 2, 3 a.m., I'm really reconsidering my whole career at that point, so why are we doing this? And by 4 a.m., it's just, you know, you're done. But you watch the hours go by, and you're thinking, how much longer? Morning. I can't wait for morning at this point. At least maybe you're going to go to sleep, or maybe you're just going to get on with your day, and then, you know, at the end of that day, you can go to bed. But how long till the morning? You know, maybe you go to bed worried or anxious about some things, and you think it's going to be better in the morning. I've said that a lot of times. Things will look better in the morning. Try to get some sleep. Words to that effect. And many times, things look or feel better when the sun comes up or it's daylight. Darkness has a way of kind of keeping us down, a little depressed, if you're already starting out that way. The daylight, the sun coming up, can be a help, be an encouragement. So the morning marks a new day. So we're all going to go to bed tonight and sleep through the night, right? Everybody? Nobody's staying up all night, I hope. And then in the morning, whatever time you get up, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever, you know, it marks a new day. It's a new beginning. Perhaps it's a fresh start. It's another day that God has given us. You know, He's promised us day and night will come. As long as the earth stands, we'll have day and night. The seasons change and all of that. So look at it that way. Another day that God has given us. And we should always be thankful when He lets us see a new day. You know, that's something you could pray about in thanking Him. Thanks for letting me see this new day with everything that the day is going to hold. Happy things, trials, which help perfect our faith, whatever the case may be. So lots of good things can happen in the morning. So if you look at this song, if you did not look at the song before you came, or you just know it pretty well anyway, or you read through it while I was rambling, what morning is the author talking about in this song? There's an allusion to morning itself as a new day and that kind of thing. But ultimately, Resurrection Day. And so he uses, or she, I guess. This is a she, right? C.E. Couchman. She uses some very strong imagery to bring some things out in here. So if you look at the song, the imagery, I think, brings a negative or worrisome thought to our minds in verses 1 and 2. Things like the storms may gather against the evening sky. I'm not a fan of storms at all. Had a storm last night down in our neck of the woods. I don't know if it stormed up here last night about 8:30, but I don't welcome those things. I don't like those. So the storms may gather against the evening sky. The foe draws near. The night falls weary. That just seems very depressing, very worrisome, very heavy, very scary. So some negative imagery in the first couple of verses of this. But what may these images represent in our lives? Okay, I don't think she's writing about thunderstorms necessarily and those kinds of things. It's all metaphors. So what might these things represent in our lives? So if she's using these to symbolize some things, storms, the foe, weary? What would be some things in our life that maybe this represents? Other thoughts? So troubling times. I mean, what are the troubling times in your life? I'm not asking you to answer that out loud, but what are the troubling times in your life? It could be things related to work. It could be things related to family. It could be related to loss of loved ones. Just there's all kinds of things that could be going on. This whole pandemic thing is troubling times for a lot of people, for us, and brings a lot of angst. So it could be difficult people. You might be dealing with difficult people in your life. We've all had to deal with people that are difficult for us, whether they're pulling us down, holding us back, or they're roadblocks for us or hindrances of some sort. And as Dakin said, you know, just sin in your life. And sometimes if you know you have that sin in your life, and you're practicing sin, and you know it's wrong, and you really wish you could just shake it, and it just brings you down. It's like a storm gathering against the sky. It's like your enemies. It's like if you're a soldier, and you see the army approaching, and it's large, and it's fearsome, and everything just feels heavy and weary. So, that might be the image that she's trying to portray to us in these verses. But as you go through the song, you know, is there hope? Is there encouragement? Is there a morning that makes this all go away? Now, tomorrow may be better than today was. You might be thinking, oh, I had a great day. If tomorrow's better, that's fantastic. Maybe you didn't have such a great day for some reason or another. Tomorrow may be a better day. But there is a day coming, there is a morning coming that will be the greatest day. All of these things can be taken away. She talks about the day breaks cloudless in the morning. So this brought back an image to my mind, and true story, and troubled time in my past that I don't really like to think about or talk about. So I was probably 9 years old. So I was only nine, so this wasn't going to go anywhere too deep. So I told you I don't like storms. I don't like storms now. I'm not afraid of them, but I watch them. I'm more likely to go out on the front porch and watch it come in than go downstairs. But when I was little, probably about 9 years old, I'm guessing, we had a summer where it just seemed like it stormed every night. And it seemed like it would wait until I had to go to bed, and then it would storm. And I blame one of my brothers for my fear, because he said, well, I probably shouldn't say this out loud. I'll tell all the adults later. He said something that stuck in my head, and he was always doing that to me. And it's not the father of anyone that's in this room right now. So, you know, and it wasn't Chris or Paul. Or Beth, so. Anytime I bring someone up, you know who I'm talking about. I worried what was going to happen, and I couldn't sleep, and I was just like tensed up like crazy, made my stomach hurt, and I would try any excuse in the book to stay up. I just want to stay up with everybody else. Or I never ask, can I sleep in Mom and Dad's room? I'm not even going to bother asking that. Tried to finagle my way down to the couch just outside their bedroom to feel safer in that. But it was turmoil. And it probably only lasted a week or two, but it just felt like all summer was that way. But I remember after dealing with this for a while, got up one Saturday and was going to town with Mom for whatever reason, and we got in the car to leave, and as we're pulling out, I'm watching the sky all the time, and I realize finally all of these clouds start breaking up, and I see blue sky and I see sunshine, and I was never so relieved in my life up to that point. Blue sky, sunshine, and by the time we got back from town, I think all the clouds were gone and we had clear sky, and then we probably went back to hot weather and a drought. You know how it is in Illinois. So, but I didn't care. I was fine with the drought. So, but the image of that blue sky and the clouds breaking up and the sun coming through was very comparable to my feelings now, thinking about that morning that's going to come, when all of the weariness I feel in this life is going to go away. So, and I really, you know, as she wrote the song, that brought that to my mind, and I think that's a clear image for me. How good I felt when the sky is cleared. She also talks about how he will raise our banner in the morning. And, you know, and raising the banner would signify what? What would raising a banner represent or signify, you think? Victory, winning the battle. And a banner is going to be, I don't know, like a flag or something like that that shows your colors or your coat of arms or whatever, I don't know, that shows we're victorious. And so the banner would be raised in that morning. Other phrases that are used in here: gather courage, saints of God march on, together, going together, working together is brought to mind. So of all the bad feelings and the negative feelings that you think and feel and that you are embroiled in your life, gather courage, because that morning's going to come, and we're going to march together. So in verse 3, a trumpet will sound to signal heaven's day. So let's look at verse 3. You've got to go down to the very last part of the song to get the first few words. So when the trumpet sounds to signal heaven's day, resurrection morning when the dead shall wake, what a glorious gathering when the Lord descends and we rise to meet him in the morning. So thinking about that trumpet. So if you would turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And verses 13 through 18. Got it, Dakin? Himself shall descend. the trump sound, the trumpet sound. So I wanted to read the verses in front and in back of that too, just to get a little more of the context. But, you know, at the end of that, he says, comfort one another with these words. The song, these words, passages like this should comfort us. Okay? So turn to the Gospel of John in chapter 5. John chapter 5 and verses 25 through verse 29. So 25 through 29. Rodney, you got it? Let's also turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Of course, chapter 15 of 1 Corinthians is all about the resurrection. So 1 Corinthians 15, beginning in verse 50 through the end of the chapter. Chad, you want to read that for us? So some passages there to give you the feel for the sounding of the resurrection and being with Christ and all that. So good imagery. So this song feels to me personally like a battle cry, almost like a spiritual military song. It's a call to action to rouse us as troops of the Lord to fight together and to get through to the morning where we will be saved. I want to share with you Mason's comments that he shared with me. He said, the main reason I chose this hymn is that generally there seems to be a lack of lament in hymns. The book of Psalms is replete with songs that express distress, weariness, anxiety due to suffering, sin, and mistreatment. When I go through a dark time, when isn't there some trial in our lives or the lives of someone near us? When I go through a dark time, it has helped me when a song like this is sung that allows me to cry out to God, expressing that things just do not feel peachy. It's important to me that songs are sung that help us to weep with those who weep as well as rejoice with those who rejoice. The chorus in the main part that hits that tone of crying out, "How long, my Lord?" In the words of the martyrs in Revelation, chapter 6, verse 10, and some of the Psalms. Here's a cluster of those. Psalm 79, verse 5, 80 and verse 4, 89 and verse 46, Psalm 90 and 13, and 94 and 3. And like most lament psalms, though this hymn does feel sad or dark in part, this does tell us the cause for a deep joy, our hope in the resurrection day. The trumpet will sound, the dead shall wake, the Lord will descend, and we will rise to meet him in the eternal morning. Perhaps it won't be so long from now. I like the way he ended that. Perhaps it won't be so long from now. How long? Well, we don't know. So we need to gather together and encourage each other and keep pushing on and keep fighting together, because at some point, you know, the day is going to dawn and we want to be ready to go. All right, so let's move on to the next song, which is number 65 in the Yellow Book. Song titled Rise Up Again. This is a song that we know, we've sung at least several times, I think enough that we know it generally pretty well at this point. This song was suggested by two special people, Skylar and Emily. Not that Mason's not special. Not as special. So the author recognizes that sin is a battle within. I kind of talked about that a little bit ago. It's in all of us as we strive to conquer temptation. We strive to beat sin, and we strive to be righteous. And the author uses the image of war, and he says his heart is at war. So, you know, when you study literature and themes and things like that, you know, you talk about conflict. And there's always the conflict of self versus self, or conflict within. So his heart is at war, spirit and flesh battling it out. And when you think of that, I think of Paul's battle. He describes in Romans 7, and in Emily's comments, which we'll look at in a little bit, she also brought that up. So let's just go ahead and turn to Romans chapter 7 now and take a look at that. Paul describes it very well. And if you're not real familiar with Romans and Paul's writing there, this can be one of those passages that you read and you stop and reread it three times to make sure you actually saw exactly what you were trying to read there. So in Romans chapter 7, he's really talking about the conflict within himself, the battle of his fleshly nature versus spiritual. Verse 14, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am a flesh sold into bondage to sin. For that which I am doing, I do not understand. For I am not practicing what I would like to do, but I am doing the very thing I hate. But if I do the very thing I do not wish to do, I agree with the law, confessing that it is good. So now, no longer am I the one doing it, but sin which indwells me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For the wishing is present in me, but the doing of the good is not. For the good that I wish, I do not do, but I practice the very evil that I do not wish. But if I'm doing the very thing I do not wish, I'm no longer the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me. I find then the principle that evil is present in me, the one who wishes to do good. For I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, but I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind, and making me a prisoner of the law of sin, which is in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will set me free from the body of this death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, on the one hand, I myself with my mind am serving the law of God, but on the other with my flesh, the law of sin." So the conflict of two natures. And we all deal with that. Those of us that are old enough to understand right from wrong, sin and righteousness, are dealing with this. Great a man as Paul was, he dealt with it. I'm so glad that that passage is in the New Testament. Makes me feel better. Not that I can say, well, hey, you know, Paul, you were a sinner, so that makes me feel okay about my sin. No, it doesn't. It shouldn't. It just understand that everybody deals with it. It's difficult because it's not a typical enemy. So a lot of times when we're combating or we're doing some sort of competition, we know what we're up against. This is not that type of an enemy that one would fight against or an opposing force to stand up to. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12, again, Paul tells us that our struggle, and he's getting ready to talk about the armor of God and how to protect ourselves. Ephesians 6:12 says, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places." So not an enemy that you see or a force that you stand up to, but more of the spiritual sense. And we can feel desperate about it because it's hard, because it's hard to understand how to do better. It's hard to understand how to quit. It's hard to understand how to get help. It's not really hard to understand it, to know what to do. It's hard to do it. So we feel desperate about it. And how many times you just want to quit and just give up? It's hard to be good sometimes. And why bother? Sometimes it just seems easier to give in than fight. And it is a fight. And that goes back, in my own mind, to what I said at the beginning of the lesson tonight. I've always considered myself a fighter. I've always considered myself that would stand up and oppose. I'm a competitive person. Why don't I compete harder when it comes to this? We were at one time helpless. And sometimes we may think we are helpless, so we feel hopeless. You know? I'm helpless. Nobody's going to help me. I don't have any hope. But I think, again, Paul's writings in the Roman letter, Romans chapter 8. In Romans chapter 8, beginning in verse 6. That's not what I want. 5, yep, thanks, yep. Romans 5, beginning verse 6, "For while we were still helpless, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man someone would dare even to die. But God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through him. For if we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son. Much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. And not only this, but we also exult in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received the reconciliation." So reconciled, or being brought back together with God. So we've been lifted out of that pit the author uses as an image in the song. He talks about the pit. He also uses the image of killing when he says, and I quote, "Help me kill my desire and my will." That's really an interesting turn of phrase that he uses. And it's very strong. If you kill something, you snuff it out, don't you? So he wants to snuff out his desire and his own will. What is your own will? Is it God's will? Well, you might argue and say, well, yeah, my will, I want to do God's will, so my will is God's will. No. It's God's will. Our will is to do things that we want to do, or how we want to do them. So we need to put that aside. We need to snuff that out. We need to be doing God's will and not our own. But isn't that really the battle? In a nutshell, just to sum it up, that's what that's all about. There's another song we sing, and I won't turn to it or call out the number, but there's a line in that song that says, the center of God's will is my home. So if God's will is the town, you want to live in the center of town or on the outskirts? And I think a lot of times we're on the outskirts and we're looking in and we want to go visit. You know, I don't like living in town. I like living out of town. That's why when we go to the store, I say we got to go to town. Grew up that way and live that way now. But when we're talking about God's will, we need to be right in the middle of it. We need to, like the dog steak, you need to twist it in the ground and tether yourself to it. So you're always in the center. So who knows us best? So again, looking at some of the words in the song, some of the phrases, who knows us the best? God. God knows our sin. God knows our frame. He knows that we are but dust. He created man and will return to the dust. And since he knows us, has known us, he knew what it would take to get us back to him. He knew what it would take to get mankind back to him. So he made the way possible with his grace. His grace is the only way we are saved. In fact, his grace is amazing. It would make a great song. So I want to read, finishing on that, I want to read Emily's comments. I appreciate this hymn for the way it describes the awesome, undeserved grace of God. So a very well-deserved use of the word awesome. I appreciate this hymn for the way it describes the awesome, undeserved grace of God. Just like Paul in Romans, it shows deep remorse and sorrow, how much we long to be righteous but never can be on our own, and yet at the same time the solid confidence and hope in our God who can rescue us and give us the grace to keep pressing on, to revive us when on our own we would have to give up. Singing this convicts me of my daily struggle with sin and yet makes my heart soar with awe at the hope that I have despite the fact that I fall weak and flawed, which are words he uses. And then she references the passage from Romans chapter 7, which we read. So the grace of God, giving us that chance to be reconciled. God loved us so much, he gave us his son. That's the first thing we should think of every morning when we get up in prayer and thanks to God, is to thank him for Jesus. Sometimes I've told you before that when I read comments that people send to me, I feel them and maybe share a common thought or a common experience with it. But so Skylar, who also suggested this song, she said, I learned this song at camp. And I know you go to a few different camps, so I don't know which camp that was, but she learned this song at camp. I loved it because the tune goes so well with the words. I think of the song as a cry for help. Like in Psalm 119, 147, it says, I rise before the dawn and cry for help. I hope in your words. We are fighting a battle within and we need God's help to win. The chorus feels like a victory cry to this battle. God is always listening, and even though I am weak and flawed, he will help me. In the end, I hope I'll be able to say that God helped me rise up. So, excellent thoughts by both Skylar and Emily from this song. So yes, there is victory. So that's great to finish that up with. There is victory, and you can stand up to it and win with God's help. And it's the only way you can win. You cannot win this battle yourself. That really should be a relief, right? So I also liked hearing some of the comments they had, so it kind of made me feel a little more validated about the way I was thinking about these three songs and kind of the battle theme. So we go to the third song for tonight, which is 529. So 529, the battle belongs to the Lord, suggested by two very special people, Cooper and Elena. I'm always really interested in why the kids pick certain songs. We'll get to that. I want to look at some passages. So Proverbs 29 verses 29 through 31. Ben Tarman, can you read that? Proverbs 21, 29 through 31.
21, 29 through 31. A wicked man displays a bold face, but as for the upright, he makes his way sure. There is no wisdom and no understanding and no counsel against the Lord. The horse is prepared for the day of battle, but the victory belongs to the Lord.
All right. Nobody can stand up against him. 2 Samuel 23 and verse 10. Ben Urban, can you turn and read that for us? 2 Samuel 23, verse 10. All right, again. We did a class for a quarter with the kids one time. I say we, I didn't teach it, somebody else taught it, but God is good at victory. Does that ring a bell? Okay. One more passage, 1 Corinthians 15:54, we've already looked at. Spencer, can you read that one for us again? 1 Corinthians 15:54. All right, so everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to be victorious. It doesn't matter if it's just your average, ordinary person competing in a game of checkers or Monopoly to playing sports or whatever on the big stage. Everybody wants to be victorious. Everybody wants to be victorious in life. Everybody wants to be successful and get ahead. Spiritually, we all want to be victorious because we know that means we're going to be saved. So what's your record? What's my record? You know, in sports, everybody wants to know, what's your record? You know, how you doing? You winning? Winning more than you're losing? So what's my record? When I go to battle against sin, what's my record? How do you know what my record is? So in sports, you're like, well, if your team's playing 500, they've won half the games. You know, you're kind of like, we're okay. You know, we're winning half the time. And some people are okay with that. I've never really been okay with that. Which may be a fault thing, but when I go to battle against sin, what is my record? I win some. You win some, don't you? I lose some. Do I win most of the time? Do I win at least half the time? I don't win all the time. Nobody in this room wins all the time. We must allow the battle to be fought by God, by the hand of God, and not try to rely on our own wisdom or strength, because What's the song say? The battle belongs to the Lord. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the Lord. I can't win this fight that we've been talking about all evening myself. I need help. And I have to let God wage it, and I have to let God win it with me, for me. And we need each other. So the battle belongs to the Lord. So I don't normally do this, but I'm going to read the words to the song, because the words speak for themselves. In heavenly armor we'll enter the land. The battle belongs to the Lord. No weapon that's fashioned against us will stand. The battle belongs to the Lord. And we sing glory, honor, power, and strength to the Lord. We sing glory, honor, power, and strength to the Lord. When the power of darkness comes in like a flood, the battle belongs to the Lord. He's raised up a standard, the power of His blood. The battle belongs to the Lord. Verse 3. When your enemy presses in hard, do not fear. The battle belongs to the Lord. Take courage, my friend. Your redemption is near. The battle belongs to the Lord. So I've been in situations where even playing for a school team or in some league or something, you go out to play a game, whether it's a football game or a basketball game, and you're just like, this isn't going to happen. This isn't going to go well. And you know it, and that's the way it goes. It seemed like when I was a kid, every time I went out on the basketball floor, the guy I had to go against was way bigger than me. And it was difficult. The battle that we're waging to get ourselves to the resurrection day, we cannot win it. It's the Lord's battle. Cooper says, I really like the song because it's a loud song. It gets your blood pumping. I also really like battles, and it's about a battle, a spiritual battle. Yes, he gets it. Travis, when you lead this song, you got to get everybody's blood pumping. Elena says, I like the tune of it. The words... I didn't forget how to read, sorry. The words make me happy when I am sad. It makes me want to obey God and trust Him. So, I really look forward to reaching out to the parents and saying, give me what the kids say. So it's very reassuring to read their comments about these songs. So, parents, when we are worshiping, our kids are listening, and they're hearing this. And you may talk about these things at home with them, some. I think when our kids were little, we talked about certain songs. We sang songs around the house. We even worked on some songs occasionally. Try to get the boys to learn how to lead a song or something. And they're paying attention. And they're hearing those things, and they're learning from these things. So we need to bear that in mind as we worship God and we use these songs to worship Him, that we're learning some fantastic lessons for ourselves, but our kids are being taught. So it's great to have Bible study in your home as a family, and it's great to use the songs that we sing in worship to do that as well. And if you're a family, it's like, we don't really together, this isn't going to go well, we're not really the singers, just do it anyway. It'll be fine. You'll get through it. Just rip the cellophane off and try it. Okay, so those are our three songs, and I hope that you're encouraged by the things that we looked at tonight that are in these songs, and I hope you're really encouraged as we sing them. And praise God.